Dish from Waitrose is an SE Creative Studio production.
Clarence Court is home to Britain's widest collection of free-range eggs since 1928. Our traditional heritage birds produce a distinctively rich and iconic yolk that takes home cooking from the ordinary to the extraordinary. Loved by chefs and favoured by foodies, each shell is stamped with its own royal crown. It's time for you to discover the wonderful world of fabulous eggs by fabulous birds. Clarence Court.
Hello, I'm Nick Grimshaw.
And I'm Angela Hartnett.
And welcome to Dish from Waitrose, the podcast that encompasses all the things we enjoy, eating, drinking and chatting.
And every week we invite someone famous, a lovely face, round for a meal.
A Michelin star meal, which you can recreate yourself. Just pop on over to waitrose.com/dish recipes.
Right, let's get cracking. You're my sous chef today.
Yes, chef. You always make me call you chef, even on texts. I hate kitchen roll.
I love kitchen roll.
Oh, I hate it.
But what do you do when you spill stuff and wipe stuff off?
I like using it. I don't like it out.
No, no. Oh, God, but I bet
It looks ugly, doesn't it?
No, but your house is going to be one of those houses that you don't even have the washing up liquid out and the like the brush to clean stuff.
Oh,
and
no.
I bet it's all in a little pot under the sink, isn't it?
I don't like nothing on any sides.
But then you're constantly in and out of cupboards.
Yeah.
It's like my friends, they have the toaster in the cupboard. So you have to get that out to make the toast. The coffee machine, it's like, what a palaver.
We have the coffee machine out. The microwave's in a cupboard.
Well, that's because you're hiding the fact you've got a microwave.
I know, but the microwave should be out because it's about 8 stone. So every time you get it out, you're like, oh, there's the microwave out.
To heat up that curry when you've had a hangover, the microwave.
Microwave rice.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I always knew it'd happen, but I think today it's happened. I think Hartnett's lost it. Because in front of me, I can see honeycomb, Marmite and pasta. Are you all
right? I'm very impressed that you recognise the honeycomb.
What's going on?
Well, that's for our guest dessert, and I've just added a little twist to it.
Okay. And what are you making as our main?
And your main is a lovely pasta dish. So we've got some roasted mushrooms here, bit of garlic that I'm grating in. So nice and garlicky, because I think they like lots of garlic. You like lots of garlic.
I love lots of garlic.
And then I've got a few dried mushrooms as well, so that's going to add a little stock to it.
Wow.
Easy peasy.
If somebody is a Guy's fan, what would you put to
them? Oh, grow up, I'd say.
What's that?
Don't like garlic. Get a grip.
Go somewhere else.
How much of a faff is it making pasta? Not for you, the chef. I mean, for me.
What, for me, Nick? Training. I'm going to go home and make this, Grimshaw. But yeah, have you failed to do it yet?
Yeah, I've made that bean thing with lemon zest in it.
Yeah, but you tell me this, but I see no evidence. Well, it's just verbal texts that
true.
Say, by the way, I've made it, but the picture is rubbish.
Well, Angela always gives me grief on Instagram because I'll put up the start of the meal, but then never the finished one. I have wanted to be a bit more chefy since we've been doing this podcast. Normally, I won't cook a fish with a head in at home.
Did you cook it with the head?
Cooked it with the head.
Well done.
So I had to send Angela pictures of the fish. No, I first of all, I said, hi, I have 2 whole sea bass. How do I do it? Oh, no, they're sea bream. And then Angela said, send me a picture. So I sent a picture of the fish.
Yeah, there's no, like, hi, how are you in these texts. We're, like, very functional.
I sent a picture of the fish. I did check Angela's book, but it was only a crudo.
Yeah,
and
sorry.
I did want to cook it because I thought, I don't want to kill anyone.
Yeah.
But Angela wrote back, no punctuation, and this is why I love it. Stuff with sliced lemon, crushed garlic and herbs, bake on parchment paper, season inside and out, glaze with olive oil, 180 for 10 to 15 minutes. Then you should be able to stick a thin knife through the thick part, also slash the skin. Send. Our guest today is no stranger to performing in front of thousands and thousands of people. So she should have no problem chatting and eating in front of our 13-strong crew. She's got Brit Awards, number one albums, number one singles. She even got an MBE like you, Angela.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And feeling left out.
I am a little bit, yeah. And most importantly, she has a thing for Angel Delight.
Oh, interesting.
It's Emily Sandé, everybody. Hi, Emily Sandé. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming round.
This is for you guys.
Wow.
This could be a good after dinner.
Oh, so should we open it after we've eaten?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
yeah, okay. Should we do that? Yeah. We've never, right. Sometimes guests come and bring something, but we've never had a wrapped gift.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
you're straight to our number one guest.
Number one guest. We're easily bribed.
Yes.
Should we have a sit?
Yep.
I think we've got to talk about the MBE first.
Why is that?
I always take the mick out of Angela and tell everyone that she makes me call her Angela Hartner MBE OBE. Which is very serious. But you, Emily, you're Emily Sandé MBE as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite a surprise. I was in LA at the time and I was with my mum.
Yeah.
And then I got the call saying that, you know, you've been given the award. Oh. Yes, honoured. And it was amazing. We had a great day at the palace.
Who gave you your award?
Prince Charles.
Fab. Yeah.
Who did you get?
The Queen, actually.
Oh, come on! Oh,
okay. Yeah. Listen, the only reason is I'm a lot older than you.
Prince Charles wasn't born, actually, at the time. Who did you take with you, Angela, when you
I
went
took
to
my mum, my brother and my sister.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, and what about
yeah,
you
Emily? Take your family.
Yeah. Yeah, mum, dad and my sister.
Oh. Yeah.
I bet mum's like lose it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the hats.
No, actually my mum was she's always like, I love all my children the same. They're all amazing. And you know, she's never sort of, if I say something, she'll always go, do those recipes work? Don't you dare swear on TV.
Yeah.
And then suddenly with this thing, she got photos and literally sent them out to anyone and everyone she knew. I said, mum, what? She's very proud, and proud. I was like, oh my God.
What, she sent out pictures of you at the palace?
Yes, to like all our relatives, like amazing. Suddenly. And it's like, mum, you've never done in this in your life. And I was like mortified.
It's got to be done. But you have many an accolade. You know, we were just saying in your introduction, awards and Brit Awards and number one albums, MBE. Is there one thing that you sort of consider to be like your greatest achievement?
The debut album going to number one, that was a big one because it was so unexpected. I'd just come into the industry. So I think to kind of enter like that is something I'll never forget. Yeah.
And what year was that? Was that like
2012?
2012.
Yeah, it was a good year. Yeah.
It was a good year. And when I was doing like my Emily Sandé research earlier, it felt like that time was just like so full of like promise and like, I don't know, it felt like anything could happen then in 2012.
And you know, with the Olympics here as well, there was hope in the city and it really felt like we were just on our way up.
How did that come about?
I just got a call to kind of come to their secret bunker where they were planning it all. So that was about 6 months before the actual event.
And
Danny Boyle was there and he had this big model of, you know, the big opening ceremony. And they asked me to sing Abide With Me. So it was a great honour and just seeing how it's all being put together and the hundreds of people involved. And he was so passionate at every stage of it. So it was just lovely to see a vision come to life and represent my country and sing such a beautiful song. And it was such a beautiful, like, quiet moment. It was very nerve-wracking. I've never been that nervous before or again. So, thank goodness. But then I got, you know, I sang my song and then I got to go back into the crowd, sit with my mom, dad, my sister, and the fireworks were there. And it just felt like, wow.
I don't think anyone's replicated what we did for the opening and closing ceremony. I honestly,
it was
I think it was brilliant. Yeah. It was, and London was like that. I remember getting the train home and stuff. And, you know, there'd be athletes that had won medals sitting on the tube and you'd just be like chatting away to them. And it was such a great feeling, though. I want the Olympics again.
Yeah.
I really know. London
brings
felt
out the best of
it really did. So you've just gone strength to strength.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a whirlwind. Yeah. You know, I'd come from Scotland and I'd been writing for people for a couple of years. And then I met Naughty Boy. So we started writing together. And then, you know, we were kind of the underdogs. No one really thought we were going to do much. And then for that to really explode and that album to take off, it felt like a dream.
How was the move to London as someone who's not from London? Because I remember when I moved from Manchester, I found it quite hard. How did you find those early days in London?
Just exciting. I think because I've grown up in a small town all my life, I just couldn't wait to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And London just gave me everything I wanted. And I only knew a couple of people, but because I was so focused on the music, I think that kept me, you know, not feeling too lonely or isolated, because it can be an intimidating city. Mm. I loved getting on the tube, seeing different people, different styles, different colours of people. I just thought it was amazing.
Yeah, I remember getting on the tube like when I first moved to London being like, wow! And everyone's so miserable along that.
Yeah. And they still are. Nothing's changed.
It's still novel, I think, if you're not from London. You're like, why, it's on the ground! Like, yeah. I'm still like that. Yeah. Still like that. But then you, Angela, didn't you cook at the Olympics, actually?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. We did all the corporate hospitality. So we had like 10 different, whatever it was, Coca-Cola, Lloyd's, all the big sponsors, basically.
Yeah.
But we were always getting into loads of trouble at the Olympics, you know, doing things we shouldn't have been doing.
Like what?
All the food would actually go out to Essex before it came in here because it all had to be checked. It was all by certain people, certain suppliers.
Oh, what? So they want like performance enhancing drugs in the
past? Yeah. Like one day we needed naan breads and poppadoms. For some reason we didn't have them. So I sent someone to Brick Lane to get them and then made them come through the gates with all this food.
What's in your bag?
Yeah, what's in the bag?
500 naan breads.
Yeah, exactly.
But you did the opening and the closing.
Yeah.
We need your agent.
Yeah.
Opening and closing.
Yeah, and I think it was actually, I don't think either of them were aware. First, I got the call for the opening, and then a couple of weeks later for the closing. And I got to sing my version of Read All About It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was great. It's great.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good gig. So we're going to have a little beffy. We're going for champagne because we've heard it's your favourite.
Oh, it is, yeah.
That's a proper pop star drink. Yeah. Do you know when you see pop stars who are like, oh no, I just want to be relatable. Yeah. I like that Emily's like, no, champagne only. I like it.
Well, I Googled what has the least calories and it was champagne.
Oh, really?
So first it was a dietary choice. Yeah, exactly.
I always thought it was vodka and diet.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. But I think champagne just comes in a little
does
end.
It?
Well, models drink it.
Yeah, wow. So.
Oh, there you go. Then.
Yeah, it's just logic.
And where you go, Emily.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if that is a champagne flute, but we're very. Yes.
We're keeping it real.
We're keeping it real around here.
Thank you.
So we've gone for a rosé one from Waitrose, naturally, which is going to go with the mushroom pasta, which Angela is going to make in a moment. Yeah. Yeah. So you love champagne. Good. That's your go-to drink.
It is, but I am trying to, you know,
not
step
drink.
Back. Yeah. Detox. I think it's, you know, you do feel healthier and happier and clearer. And but it's so lovely and bubbly.
It is so bubbly. Yeah. And also I feel like if you are going to be, you know, have a drink or eat chocolate.
Yeah.
At least with champagne, you're like, it's a treat.
Exactly.
That,
go
it's
for
not
it.
Like you're boshing cans of cider in the park. Like, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, Emily. Cheers, Angela.
Lovely to meet you.
Oh, you too.
That's fab.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah, we'll have a bottle each.
Yeah.
Because when I moved to London, my mum and dad were saying, like, don't come up here with these London ways. Do your family think you've changed at all? Like, the fact you're like, oh, is there any champagne around?
Yeah, I probably now think about it. Because I remember the phone call I gave them to say I'm going to move down to London. Because I was studying medicine at the time. So it was a bit.
You grew up in Scotland, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in Glasgow.
Right.
So like, okay, how are you going to afford that? I said, I'll find a way. But yeah, I think they probably have seen me change, but they're quite nice. They're always like, come up to Scotland whenever you want. Uh-huh. You know, you can rest and stop. Because they think London's just a bit too hectic and busy. It never stops. Yeah. But that's why I love it. You know, I live in East London, so it's just constantly. There's always like a 4 a.m. brawl or...
Normally Nick.
Yeah.
Where's my champagne?
Where's the champagne? Emily Sunday says it's healthy.
So you gave up medical school. How many years were you into it when you then said, actually, I'm going to start singing and writing music?
I was 4 years into it.
Wow.
And it
That's
was
really in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you ever get the doctor inklings, you know, backstage, someone cuts their finger. Oh. Leave it, I'm a medic, come here.
I'm so useless. I mean, I literally just remember some like biochemistry. That's it.
That's blood. That's all I know. Yeah. I'm going to take some pasta.
Okay.
Excuse me a moment.
Please. Do you want a hand without?
I'm all right, lovely. Thank you.
Now, Angela has made this pasta from scratch.
Okay, wow.
Do you ever do that at home? Do you ever cook at home, Emily?
Sometimes. I like quickness, so it never really gets that great. But my sister's an amazing cook, so I let her kind of... The kitchen's her realm.
Right.
And I just dip in and out when she's ready to feed the troops.
More the eating.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm more down your way than Angela's.
Yeah.
Because I always want to make pasta from scratch, but I always think maybe a bit of a faff. Yeah. But Angela said it's all right, but she's a chef.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
So she's like, yeah, it's fine. But again, yeah. Michelin star chef. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're a pasta fan, right?
Yeah, sadly. I'm trying to give it up, but I love it.
You can't give up pasta.
I know.
I'd rather so do like boot camps than give up pasta.
Yeah. It's so nice, so comforting. Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
Would you say that people who are listening to this, Angela, should try and make their own pasta?
I think it's easy, and I think it's like, it's just, and also it's cheap. If you really screw it up, you haven't wasted a lot of money.
That's true.
You know, it's flour and eggs and a little bit of water or a little bit of olive oil. So I think you can do that. But obviously, you know, I've been doing it for years. But I think once, do it a couple of times, you'll get used to it. People can make the pasta because that's making dough. What people will struggle with is rolling it.
Oh, okay.
But once you've seen someone do it, it's not so hard.
How long do they take you?
Oh, I've been, my family on my mother's side, they're all Italian, so as the eldest granddaughter, I had to do everything. My brother did nothing, literally nothing. You know, he'd go out and all the rest, and I had to go and help Nonna all the time. And even when he lived in Tokyo and we had this lovely pasta in the freezer that we make for Christmas, and it was like in March, I said, oh, Nonna, can I have that? She said, no. They're for your brother. I said, he's thousands of miles away. Thousands. And he still had the edge on me. So, I'm not bitter.
No, not at all.
Anyway,
but he doesn't have an MBE, does he?
He doesn't,
He does not.
So I learned as a kid. I was really lucky, and that was great. And so it was good. And then I do it as a job, so now it's all right.
That looks good.
It looks so good. Did you cook a lot, like, as a family when you were growing up? Were you quite a foodie household?
Yeah, my dad's a really good cook, actually.
Oh, really?
And he would cook a lot of dishes from Zambia. We grew up eating a lot of, like, nshima. It's kind of like a maize meal dough that you kind of have to stir, and it gets thicker and thicker, and then you pull it, dip it into like some nice stews. My dad's an amazing cook. He's very creative and spontaneous, but he always just nails it. And my mum would bring the more like British classics, the jacket potatoes.
Less chefy. But still delicious.
Yeah, exactly.
Still delicious.
Yes.
So, Angela, what have we got going on here? I know it's pasta.
So we have tagliatelle with wild mushrooms, dried porcini, parsley, bit of lemon, garlic, and a secret ingredient, if you can guess it, which goes very well with mushrooms. This is to test Nick after a couple of months, seeing how his palate. I love the way you're just deciphering that. Come on, Muttley, what's going on in there? Let's go.
It's something like...
Can you taste the lemon?
Can taste the lemon. There's something a bit like...
I'll give you a cue. Yeasty.
Heavy.
Spreadable yeasty.
Oh.
Oh, you got it.
Marmite.
Really?
Mm.
Wow. See, Marmite goes brilliantly with mushrooms, you see.
Mm.
And a little bit of Marmite gives it that sort of...
How much are we talking?
Literally, so like a tiny little bit of a teaspoon. And it melts down in the mushrooms. And it gives it that lovely sort of earthiness to it, I think.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's the
now
word,
I sound like a real chef.
No, but that's right. It tastes a bit like... Should live underground. In a nice way.
Unwashed mushrooms, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is so good.
And so once you have a recipe, when do you know it's complete? Or do you keep evolving it as you...
Well, something like this, you know, it works. And you might, like, one day not put Marmite in, or you might not have the lemon or something. But I think at work, you're always evolving. Because I think you look at a dish. And I think also because you're doing a dish day in, day out.
Right, yeah.
Well, I imagine songwriting must be... How do you know you finished a song? I mean, how do you know that that is it? And then you sing it and you suddenly... I mean, you know, we had Tom Grennan in the other week. And he was saying it's not fun. He didn't say it wasn't fun, but actually people think it's easy and you're there, but actually it's a big chore writing songs.
The fun part's the very beginning when it's like, let's jam, and like the little groove comes. The not so fun is when you have to get more disciplined and like start honing it in, mixing, mastering. Like,
I think it's the maddest skill on the planet, like being able to write a song and sing a song and then have it connect with millions of people.
Have you ever tried to write one?
Well, as a teenager, because I used to love music and I was in like the brass band and the choir and then I had a guitar. Oh, cool. And I was like, I'm gonna write, I found my lyrics.
Yeah.
They're nice. Really bad. I was looking through all like my old scrapbooks and stuff and I read the lyrics, but they're like classic teenage emo.
Yeah.
Like they're so bad. Like so bad. And I have
but they could have a renaissance now. You never they know. Could. They could.
Yeah.
There are some like shocking lyrics out.
There are, actually. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're probably doing a lot better than something out there.
Pretty bad. But do you remember your first songs, Emily, that you sat and wrote?
Yeah. I mean, they're a little bit cringe because I was so... when I read them, I can just tell I was really trying to be serious. Yeah. I was trying to be, you know, I was 8 and I was trying to be considered like this really serious artist. Because I'm not going to write about love. I'm going to write about, you know, political, all of these things. Yeah. But there was one song called Yesterday's Tomorrow and it's all about the stage setting scene. And if we don't learn from the past, we set the same scene, all of this.
Wow.
But yeah. It was
quite
nice.
Yeah,
exactly. It was a little bit deep, yeah.
Yeah.
And then my friends and I wrote one for the school talent show. It was about an alien coming to Earth. It's like, coming from planet space, oh baby, coming from miles away. What is your name, oh love, my baby? It's like all of this.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, I was ripping off.
I was feeling that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's fun though, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just starting something from nothing. And I think that's why I fell in love with it as a kid, because it felt so powerful. You've got this little magic power and you have this voice and people will listen to you if you sing. Mm. So it's nice.
And how were your parents when you started writing songs and wanting to sing? Because I wanted to do that, but my voice was horrible. So my mum and dad would be like, shut up! But how was it for you? Because I guess every kid like was like, I want to be a singer or I want to do a show.
Yeah, they were quite supportive. There's this memory my sister and I have. We used to share a room and then I learnt Mariah Carey's, you know, she covered that song, I Can't Live.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was the first song I ever learned. And I was singing it and my dad came and was like, oh, you're not bad. Like, we both remember my dad saying that. And then he's like, right, okay, stand by there. He started giving me like acting classes. He's like, stroke the door and just think of this person that you can't live without and all the emotions. And because he loved, you know, Celine Dion, Mariah's Whitney, they're just the big balladeers. So that was the beginning.
Did you perform at family parties? Were you sort of wheeled out at Christmas?
They couldn't stop me. And I played recorder, there'd be a new recorder. So when I think back, I was probably quite annoying, but it worked out, thankfully.
Your sister still loves you. Yes. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, another song from Emily.
Yes, I
got it. Here we go. Yeah. Let's talk about your most recent album. You wrote that in lockdown, right? When you were living in the countryside.
I was out there with the family, and I just like a year prior to that set up my own studio.
Right.
And some songs were written a few years ago, but this was the time I could pull everything together, and a lot of new ones were written there in that room. And it was just great to have time to make mistakes, to try things. And I believe, you know, in destiny and synchronicity. Yeah. And I feel like whoever's there, just like, sometimes it'd just be friends and they're like, oh yeah, I make beats. And I'm like, oh, come on through, show me what you get.
Much more organic and natural. Yeah. Like that. Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely work with Naughty Boy a lot. Yeah. And there's a guy called Ollie Green that I worked with a lot on this album. Yeah. Henry Davies. It's just like a lot of people that just come to the house and it was a vibe. It was nice.
And talk to me about when you were in the countryside and you've wrote those songs. How do you do the edit to get it to an album? Because I guess you don't just be like, right, that's 10. Yeah. It's not sort of how an artist works, is it?
Yeah.
So how do you do you play them to people? Do you sort of test them out in your family?
Yeah, I mean, the studio's right next to the kitchen. So I'd see my sister and my nephews walking back and forth and it's like a glass door. Mm-hmm. So if we're onto something, you can see people bobbing. My nephew's got a really good ear, actually. He was only about 2 or 3 during the making of it, but he was just like, Auntie Delta, I like that one, yeah. Uh-huh. So, if I get the nod from my sister or my nephew, then I think we're onto something. And we wrote about 60, 70 songs, maybe.
70 songs?
There was just a whole big folder. So that's why it's good, you know, when managers come in. And my manager has a great music ear. So he was like, okay, I think maybe finish these 20 and we'll take it from there.
Just the 20.
Yeah.
And then talk to me about Ready for Love, because Ready for Love, you know, it's quite celebratory, but also the lyrics are like, oh my God. Like, that is such an emotional record.
Yeah.
How is it when you write something like that, like, does it feel really cathartic and therapeutic? Like, what does that feel like to, because I don't know, I think it's quite rare that anyone, unless you're a musician, would say those things out loud. You make me feel complete, or you make me feel whole. And you know,
you don't say it in normal conversation, do you?
That's true, actually. You do get to get a lot off your chest. Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, falling in love at that point. It was in the summer, and we'd just been allowed to go out. So that's when we had the studio session.
Yeah.
I got into the session, I was like, I want to do Whitney. Like, I want to really sing on this one, because I've been listening to a lot of her. And I was in love. And when you're in love, it just all flows out. Mm-hmm. It's like you just want to send, like, love letters to someone, and it goes from this little private thing into these big songs. I loved it. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And your partner's called Joanna. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
When you've made a song like that, do you play it to Joanna? And how is that? And when do you play it to somebody?
Well, she's an amazing musician, so I usually wait till it's, like, really finished, because I don't want her to be like, you could have sang that better. But, like, so, and I knew she's always like, you need to sing. Like, you go for it, sing. So when I said, I've got a song you're really going to like. When we're making it, I said, I think you're going to like this one.
Right.
But I waited till it was completed to show it to her. She loves that one. She's like, why are you not singing this one tonight? But no, she's, she really loves that. I think that's actually her favorite from the album.
How does it feel with you as well, Andrew? Do you ever, like, feel the same when you've made a recipe? Are you like, Neil, please approve?
No, but you do. The person you love, you want their approval,
yes,
and you want them to love it more than anything.
Exactly.
So there are many times where I do cook, and if I'm certainly doing a gig outside of the kitchen and, like, we're at an event or something, I will always adhere to Neil and go, taste this. Check that's all right. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, when I'm gigging with Nick next, I'll make sure it's Nick, because, you know, his palate's very refined.
Oh, I would eat anything, so I don't know if I'm... I know that I'm the best judge. I'm like, well, nice, It's so nice. I'll take what I can get. But do you ever argue two musicians living together? Are you arguing, like, what's on?
I think the only argument we have is... because I really want her to teach me, like, how to play the way she does. She's like, well, you have to practice. You know, I keep I was like, yeah, but I need a teacher. She's like, well, I can't
not
teach you if
me.
You're not going to practice. So, you know, but when it comes to music, we're pretty cool. Yeah.
Is there anything that's either brilliant. Of you love and the other one hates? Is there anything where you're like, because my boyfriend doesn't really love, like, any, like, metal, really.
Okay,
so if I remember we had a really big... well, it's not metal, but we had a massive Nirvana row once. Where he was like, she's such a noise!
I'm sort of with Misha on this
but
one.
I find, like, noisier stuff more relaxing when I've got work to do. Because if I was listening to, like, your music or Jill Scott's, like, I get lost in the lyrics. It, like, pulls me in.
And
then I'm like, oh, that is sad. This has been really good, like, really tasty.
So nice.
Thank you.
If you want to make this at home like me, you can check out this recipe and all the recipes that you hear on waitrose.com/dish recipes. And it'll be all on there. Dish recipes.
I'm going to get dessert. Finish your mouthful.
Okay.
How do they give you, like, the star? Is that similar to, like, the MBE? Like, is it Michelin star? Yeah.
Oh, you just find out on the day when they publish the list.
Oh.
There's a few people I know that have lost stars that have been with the guide for a long time. And then what they tend to do is then...
how do you lose it?
Just not being consistent like you should be.
Oh, my God, that's like having to give a Brit Award back.
And then, So, you know, it's quite hard, I think.
Well hard.
I mean, if I lost it doing this, we'd be able to say, Andrew Michelin star chef.
Yeah, former Michelin star chef.
I mean, it would be really, you know, so anyway, so let's not joke
fingers
about
crossed.
That.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So now we move on to dessert, which I never... this might be why you lose the Michelin star chef. What is this?
This is a lovely mousse that we do at Murano. No. This is Emily's favourite dessert from childhood, which I think we've all had. We've all probably made Angel Delight, and it's butterscotch recipe.
Oh, wow.
Is that your favourite?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. It's the only one, I think.
Yeah,
it is the only one.
Really, strawberry's not bad.
I think butterscotch. And then what I have done is to, not that you need jazzing up, but just add a little texture, is made some honeycomb. So basically, what's that chocolate bar? What is
crunchy.
That? Crunchy, a crunchy bar, which is really easy.
You made that?
I made that. So that's caster sugar, golden syrup, and the key to get the crunch in the bubbles is bicarbonate of soda.
Mm. Do you want to try some of that?
So you can have a little bit of crunchy with your Angel Delight.
Yeah, I want a little bit of crunchy. Mm. I love that you made this. I used to love Angel Delight. It used to feel like really decadent.
Yeah.
And it's like powder. Yeah. But as a kid, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Wow. Posh, yeah. Like so posh.
But also the fact that a powder could become a mousse. Like that was like science. Well, I'm not even sure it was science, but it's quite experimental.
I think it's because you had to wait a little bit as well. So it was a bit of a process,
wasn't it?
Like the waiting for it used to get you going.
I'm so happy.
Emily's making much more noise about this than the pasta.
Than the pasta. She's like, now this is nice.
Can we get a taxi for this one? Out!
Finally, something tasty.
The honeycomb is delicious.
But this is a big childhood favourite of yours, isn't it? And Angel Delight.
Yeah.
Who used to make it? Your mum, your dad?
Yeah, my mum, after the jacket potato, would have some Angel Delight. Yeah. I was happy.
I'm forgiving you if what's in this box, Emily. Please. That's all I'm saying.
This is just some fun for after dinner.
I like that we have a wrap.
Yes.
The attention to detail.
Very good.
You've got to shoot into the dinosaur's mouth there.
Oh. Yeah.
So it's eating, you know.
Eating.
Yes.
Love it.
Emily, that is a hungry T-Rex.
Yes.
We hit the dinosaur's leveled tongue to rack up points. Balls collected inside the belly. Pump action launcher. 8 indoor safe foam balls and LED counter included. Feed from 6 meters away. So if any guest wants to cancel with COVID, don't worry.
Yeah, we've got this one.
Open your mouth, we can fire this in. Emily, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. Congrats on the new record.
Thank you.
And I never said this before, but thanks for the dinosaur.
Anytime.
Emily Sande, everybody.
Thanks.
That's so good. All the recipes and drinks can be found on the Waitrose website at waitrose.com/dishrecipes.
Follow Dish from Waitrose wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your family, and why not leave us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
We can't all have a Michelin star chef in the kitchen, but you can get some Michelin star advice. Email your questions for Angela to dish@waitrose.co.uk.